a lot of politicians in Europe need to create a diversion from the domestic problem in their respective country. And the best way to create a diversion and to create a unity inside the country, which is disunion, is to have a common adversary. So again, I go back, I listened last night to Macron. I mean, the tone he has sounds to me like a declaration of war against Russia. And to be honest, there's no way that the French government, that the new German government, that the existing Brits government can survive if there is no war in Ukraine against Russia. Because once the war ends, I mean, the people will ask their politicians to be accountable for what's happening in their domestic economy.
Lauren LeCue, the Macro Butler Report. How are you, my friend?
I'm very well, thank you. And thanks for having me on your channel.
It's very much my pleasure. I follow you on X, and you came out with a crystal ball for 25. I'd like to revisit that and work that out a little bit. Your first pick was the Fed would resume rate hikes before December 31st, before the end of the year. Work that out for me, and do you still see that?
Well, I look at financial market through the lens of the business cycle. So if we look where we are in the U.S. in the business cycle, I mean, we have been in inflationary environment since the start of the decade. And the U.S. has fluctuated around a short period of stagnation in 22. And since early 23 is back in an inflationary boom. So in an inflationary boom and with what's in the cards for the U.S. economy, meaning tariff, tighter labor market because tighter immigration policies and trade wars across the world. In fact, there were no reason for the Fed to cut rates in September last year. It was more a political move than anything else. And so that's why at the end of the day, by the second half of the year, the Fed will have to be forced to once again raise rates.
Yeah, it's so. You mentioned tariffs. That's going to have a pretty, you still see us in inflation environment from what you're telling me, and tariffs are really going to add to that inflationary environment, correct?
Yeah, correct. I mean, in fact, I don't rely on official data because government data are manipulated for propaganda. So why I think that the U.S. is in an inflationary environment is I monitor, in fact, the gold-to-bond ratio and its position versus the seven-year moving average. And since the start of the decade, this ratio has been well above the seven-year moving average, meaning that the bond market is not a store of value. And I mean, in terms of way to protect your wealth against rising prices or rising inflation, you need to own gold, meaning that to come back to the tariff. In fact, if you look throughout history, tariff have always been inflationary. So this will add to the pain of the U.S. consumer, meaning that the U.S. consumer will have to fit the bill for this tariff.
Got it. You also said something interesting right here, and I was long energy all of 24, which was not a good trade. But you have on here that the U.S. energy sector will outperform the Magnificent Seven. Why is that?
Well, I think that it comes back to the stage of the business cycle. So if you look at past history, and as I still think that the U.S. will shift from the current inflationary boom into an inflationary bust by the second half of this year. In fact, in stagflation or inflationary bust, historically, energy producers have outperformed energy consumers. So here I just take the Magnificent Seven as a proxy for energy consumer and the oil and gas sector as a proxy for energy producer. But to be honest, the Magnificent Seven are not really magnificent since the start of the year already. So I guess that I would have changed this recommendation into the outperformance of the energy sector versus the tech sector.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And really, yeah, the tech sector being the NASDAQ, are you making the assumption that the energy sector will outperform the NASDAQ market as a whole?
Well, I think that in this 2025 prediction, I also highlighted that the Dow Jones will outperform the NASDAQ. So this is the same kind of environment where you have a slowdown in the economy. The economy is moving from the current boom into a bust. This usually is a better environment for large cap, i.e. the Dow Jones versus the NASDAQ. So if you remember also, and I mean, there's something that a lot of investors forget is the Dow Jones is mostly driven by inflows, foreign inflows into the U.S., while the NASDAQ at the end of the day is kind of a retail index. So is this in this global environment where you have more inflows coming into U.S. asset and the Dow outperform the NASDAQ? And ultimately, because I think that geopolitics, in fact, will push oil price much higher also in the next few months. You will have this outperformance of the oil and gas versus the tech sector. So once again, it seems still a very contrarian call for 2025. We are only 2 months in the year, but I'm pretty comfortable to add on this energy producer stock at current level because Unlove, Underhorn, most of these companies are delivering steady cash flow and valuation is very cheap.
Yeah. So would you stick with just the bigger players such as like Exxon, Chevron, or the ETFs? Is that what you would do for investors?
Well, I think it depends on the risk appetite of each investor. I would say the safe bets are, of course, the oil major and the more domestic U.S. oil producer they are, I would say the better because the less riskier. And I still see a lot of opportunities for the exploration and production, especially the domestic U.S. player, which I think will benefit from this upcoming rebound in the oil price and also rising geopolitical tension in the Middle East and elsewhere in the world.
Okay. Does this mean that you are, since you see opportunity in oil, are you specifically bullish on oil or the oil producers at these levels?
Well, as I said, I think that, I mean, I'm not a geopolitical expert, but what you can read coming from Eastern Europe or what you can read coming from the Middle East, it doesn't look like a sustainable peace is around the corner. So I would say that this will inevitably add pressure on the supply side. And I don't think that at, let's say, $66 WTI, any geopolitical premium is in the current price. So I would think that the price, in fact, for this oil producer can stick around 70, 75, and they can still deliver very decent cash flow, pay rising dividends. And as I said, the valuation is very cheap and is still an unloved sector by most of investors. And also, you must remember that the oil and gas sector is around 3 to 5% of the S&P 500. It has never been so low in the whole S&P 500. So what was the downside risk, I would say, if you take a 12-month view from here?
Yeah, no, I would agree with you, everything that you said. But let's move on. You think that the 30 yield will go above 6%. That's interesting to me. That means really signaling you think that we'll more than likely be in a recession. Is that correct?
Well, I think that there are a lot of moving parts here. So, of course, the past few weeks have seen a pullback in long-dated yields. I think it's more the usual Pavlovian reflex of some investor who think that in a risk of they will be protected by government bonds. But the reality is, even if Doge is really implemented, as it could be, but I think that the current administration will still have a lot of challenges to implement Doge. I mean, the U.S. has around $8 trillion to refinance of debts this year. Who is going to buy a 10-year yield at 4.1% if the CPI rebound to 3.5% or 4% in the second half of the year? I think that nobody is going to buy bonds. And also, this is, has to be put in the context of the weaponization of U.S. dollar asset, meaning that the trend is that foreign investor, especially institutional investor in Asia and the global source, increasingly reluctant to buy U.S. Treasury, because I don't think that they can believe Trump more than they could believe Biden, to be honest.
Got it. You see that the U.S. dollar is going to continue. It seems like you're still bullish on the U.S. dollar. Talk a little bit about that. Do you see that as a money flow coming back to the U.S., or do you see that as like an inflationary deflationary situation where people have to go to cash?
Well, I think that the reason that I'm very bullish on the U.S. dollar, there are three main reasons. First, the tariffs are very positive for the U.S. dollar, because the only way to avoid to pay tariffs is to build manufacturing plants in the U.S. This means that there will be a lot of capex to be done this year and next year in the U.S. from foreign investors. This means there's a natural inflow of U.S. dollar from this foreign manufacturer to build manufacturing plants in the U.S. This is the first reason. The second reason is, I mean, a fiat currency like the U.S. dollar is always comparing a dirty shirt with another dirty shirt. So the play is, which is the less dirty shirt in the laundry basket, right? And if you look around, I mean, who would like to keep its asset in Europe, where the war is at the doorstep, where governments are on the verge of a sovereign debt crisis, where governments are spending recklessly on defense and on programs that are not going to create long-term growth for their countries? So clearly, to me, it's a common sense that nobody would want to own any asset in euro. The same is true in pound. And then if you look at the other major currency in the DXY index, you have the Japanese yen. And I think, in fact, the Japanese yen, a lot of people think the Japanese yen is cheap. I quite agree to say that the Japanese yen is cheap. But I would say until the BOJ is unable to raise rate and still have bond rate in the 1+% in Japanese yen, when you can 4+ or 5% in US dollar, I mean, anyone will still do the carry trade. I quite agree, and I listen to a lot of people telling that this carry trade will be unwind. But I still think that at the end of the day, if you are Miss Watanabe, you can earn 5% in US dollar, or you can earn 1.5% in Japanese yen. It's quite a common sense for Miss Watanabe to place cash in US dollar.
Yeah, okay, so I'm glad you touched on that too, because, and again, I'm just paraphrasing, you do not see the end of the carry trade just because of pragmatics, because they're getting a higher interest rate over here. You don't see that because it's really driven by interest rates, correct?
Yes, also, and I think that the third is the geopolitics, right? If you have more uncertainties around Europe, if you have more uncertainties around the Middle East, if you have a crisis developing in the Korean Peninsula, which is something that is highly probable because we have seen a lot of tension between the Western countries and North Korea, and there could be a conflict starting in North Korea. Anytime soon, nobody knows. But these are factors that push investors to move their cash from their domestic region into the U.S. because the U.S. as Donald Trump always said, there's a beautiful motion to protect the U.S. on both sides. So yeah. Again, the U.S. dollar, I don't say that the U.S. dollar is the best asset to own, but it's the cleanest dirty shirt of the laundry basket. And why the U.S. dollar appreciate against other fiat currency? In fact, it's going to depreciate against the real currency, which are gold, which are silver, which are platinum, or which are other commodities, as we have seen since the start of the year. In fact, we have the Bloomberg Commodity Index is outperforming all other asset class since the start of the year, and nobody is talking about that.
Yeah, well, the thing you see is I really share your thesis. I see, and again, you've noted it, and you must note it, that the dollar is just the cleanest dirty shirt in the laundry basket. So, but that all being said, it's the cleanest shirt. So if you're going to tell me what currency I'm going to buy in 25, I want to hold a lot of US dollars. And then we talked about just money flow. I would agree with you. I think money flow's coming back to the US. You're going to have this really interesting situation where you have money flowing back to the US, a strong dollar relative to all other currencies. And yet you're also going to have a rising gold price and silver price, and with also just pretty much all commodities. That's been my thesis, and that's what you're saying, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And I think there's another point that I want to add why the US dollar is set to continue to rise. It's because, in fact, I think it's very specific to what's happening in Asia. So in Asia and among the BRICS, you see a new trend is that these countries start to trade between each other in their local currency, meaning that they don't generate US dollar by trading. Let's say when Thailand sells rice to China, it does it in renminbi or in Thai baht. But if Thailand or a Thai company has a US dollar debt to reimburse, it needs to buy US dollar on the market to reimburse this US dollar debt. So in fact, the trend that we have seen across the BRICS of trading in local currency is very bullish for the US dollar in the short term, because it creates a lack of US dollar in circulation in the world. And we all know that when there's a big demand of something and a lack of supply, I mean, the price is going up. So as I said, you will see the US dollar make new highs against a lot or most of fiat currencies this year.
Got it. Again, just going down your crystal ball here. You think the Eurozone, on the whole currency topic, you think the Eurozone will implement capital controls? That would be the death knell for Europe. But tell me about that. Why do you think that?
Well, I think that even before the events of the past few weeks, you could see that a lot of loans coming out of the Europe or out of the UK, out of Switzerland, you have all this gold moving from London and Zurich into the vault of New York. So all this show that the smart investors are smelling something coming. They are smelling a rat.
And, yes.
I mean, you don't need to be an expert in European politics and in European finance to understand that all these governments, first, they can get, they are not very, not, none of the governments are very popular in Europe. I have a difficulty to give you one government that is having a popular tone in Europe. But what they try to do is buy the sentiment of their citizens by increasing spending. So you had yesterday, you had the German government announcing the first whatever it takes fiscal spending in since the reunification of Germany. And this shows that even a government which is a lame duck government, because the new government has not won the popular vote, if you would say, in the US. But it tried to buy the sentiment of the people by spending money on new spending. So first, European governments are spending money they don't have. They are spending money now. They want to increase defense spending, which are not very, I would say, positive for long-term economic growth. And so at the end of the day, you are in a region where most countries are on the verge of a sovereign debt default. I would think that France is the prime candidate of this sovereign default. I mean, I joke with one of my friends over Christmas that the IMF will be around the Champs-Élysées before the Bastille Day. Maybe I was too optimistic or pessimistic for France. But this comes in an environment where you clearly see that the big financial institutions have already smelled the rat and are moving their money out of the Eurozone. So I think that, like we have seen in Asia during the Asian financial crisis, the first step that all this government will take is to implement capital control. If you remember when the Asian financial crisis started in 1998, you had Malaysia, Thailand implementing capital control. And that's the way, I would say, to buy time in a crisis.
Okay, so interesting point here. You see, basically, you said the sovereign debt crisis, you think it's going to hit France first. Is that correct?
I mean, if you look the what happened over the past 2 days, you had a big jump in the yield of the German government bond, right? Yeah. So this reckless fiscal spending announcement. And in fact, this year in Europe, France is the country that has higher need in terms of refinancing. France has not had a functioning government since last summer. So France is clearly in a dire state. And I wouldn't be surprised that we see a big issue on the French government bond issuance by the summer. And this also explains why suddenly Macron is so bellicose, because he knows that the only way for him to stay in power during this crisis time is to create a war that doesn't need to happen.
Okay, let's go to that, because their last point, and I missed a couple, but this was very interesting to me. You think that there'll be a new proxy war with NATO and the Global South in the Korean Peninsula. So work that out with me, and how does that involve NATO?
Well, first, you may notice that over the past few months, the Western press and focus on this North Korean military that was deployed along the Russian army to fight in Ukraine. So you can understand that the West is trying to open a new war somewhere, because, I mean, the Ukraine war, people are getting tired. Even Trump tried to settle the Ukraine war as soon as possible, but the Europeans are not really keen to do it. Then you have the Middle East war, which is also seems to be able to come back anytime soon. So I think that NATO, to survive, need to create wars. NATO has no reason to survive if there's no war. So you also may remember that a few months ago, last year, there has been this AUKUS agreement between South Korea, Australia, and the U.S., and ultimately, this AUKUS agreement was kind of a try to create a NATO in Asia. It doesn't seem that it's going the way that the previous American administration wanted it to go. But I would think that you all know that NATO will try to, from my point of view, NATO to need to create wars to survive, and the more obvious new war they could create is in the Korean Peninsula, because they could argue easily that North Korea has collaborated with Russia in the Ukraine special operations. So I guess it would be easy for the Western press to build a story around there, and probably to create a false flag to open a new war in Asia.
Yeah, that's interesting, obviously, because if you think about the proximity, it's not really approximate, but yet it all makes sense too. With North Korea supporting Russia in this war with Ukraine.
Well, I think if I may, people must remember that North Korea survived thanks to energy it received from Russia, thanks to some manufacturing goods it received from China. So, I mean, the regime in North Korea is only, I would say, on survival mode thanks to China and Russia. So by creating this war between the South and the North in Korea, in fact, I would say NATO and all the warmongers in Brussels and the warmongers that are left in Washington could easily target both China and Russia.
So it's interesting, too, how you point out that NATO needs war really to survive. And is that, and we're going geopolitical here, which I'm happy to go to if you are. Is that something that in the past week, more or less with all of the Zelensky being in talking to the Brits, talking to the Europeans, really? Yeah, I mean, it sounds, looks like to me that Europe just really needs this war with Ukraine to continue so they can finance it. Is that your opinion?
Yes, of course. I think, as I said, a lot of politicians in Europe need to create a diversion from the domestic problem in their respective country. And the best way to create a diversion and to create a unity inside a country, which is disunion, is to have a common adversary. So again, I go back, I listened last night to Macron. I mean, the tone he has sounds to me like a declaration of war against Russia. And to be honest, there's no way that the French government, that the new German government, that the existing Brits government can survive if there is no war in Ukraine against Russia. Because once the war ends, I mean, the people will ask their politician to be accountable for what's happening in their domestic economy. And to be honest, what they have to show, I mean, it's about the same as what Biden had to show to the American people.
Yeah. It also all goes back, and I share your thesis, but it all goes back to then as an investor, that's how why I see, and it's kind of counterintuitive, but that's why I see money coming back to the U.S. because of safety. And you don't have war. And you pointed out earlier in a conversation, we're buffered by two different huge oceans. So we don't have that. And then also gold. And again, this is just stability. So you're having this counter. And then commodities, the rest of commodities are just the value play. So yeah, it's all counterintuitive, but it makes a lot of sense. That makes
sense. No, it's not counterintuitive. I think that this is reasonable to think because, I mean, when there is a war in Europe, when there's a war in the Middle East, and potentially there's a war in Asia, I mean, where can you put your money safely at work is in the U.S. So you go and buy U.S. stocks, which are, I mean, I think that this year will be different from next year because in the U.S., you will see the U.S. stock market to be driven mostly by these foreign flows. And again, that's why I think that the Dow will outperform the Nasdaq because the Dow is mostly the index that is chosen by this big foreign institutional investor to invest. They are not going to invest their money in the small cap or in the very speculative tech sector. And on the other end, in the U.S., with the economy slowing down, in fact, you're going to see retail investor kind of suffering. So there will be not so able to buy the dip and to be FOMO on Nasdaq stock. So I think that this is the trend is because it's mostly capital flows that are driving performance of asset. I mean, you have US dollar strengthening, you have the Dow outperforming the Nasdaq, and then ultimately I mean, everyone who has studied economics and finance know that gold is for war. So gold is the anti-fragile asset with no counterparty risk. So gold price will go up in all currencies. And at the end of the day, if there are three wars around the world, I mean, this will create a scarcity and shortage. This will create demand for base metal, for industrial metal. This will create shortage because supply chain will be impacted once again. And this is very bullish for commodities in general. So this year you had, I mean, it's mostly precious metal that have started the year on a strong note. But I think that in fact, by the second half of the year, we will see a catch up in industrial metals. And after that, maybe also soft commodities.
Interesting. Lauren, how can people reach you if they're becoming a fan? If they want to know more about you and read about your work, how do they do that?
Well, they can Google The Macro Butler. I write a weekly newsletter on Substack. They also contact me at info@themacrobutler.com. In fact, I advise high net worth individuals. So if one of those are interested, they can reach to me and I can help them.
Excellent. Lauren LeCue, The Macro Butler. It's been really great to have you on. I'd love to have you on again very soon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.